Hi, I'm Abby Rosenblum, founder of Social Modern Matchmaking and your host of Ghosted, a podcast about making dating easy and fun again so you can find your boo. Get it? We'll talk with dating experts, coaches, and real clients of mine and single people from around the world. Stick around for corny jokes, dating advice, and deep dives into the psychology behind finding love. Welcome back to the Ghosted podcast, where I hope we never ghost you or you end up getting ghosted. As you know, I started this podcast because it's my mission to stop ghosting. And, you know, it still happens. I don't think I can stop everybody. But I'm excited today to talk about this whole concept of being authentic. I think it's a word that maybe is thrown out a little too much. But today we're going to be authentic about how we talk about authenticity. And I have the perfect guest. David Chambers, the authentic man, empowers men to create the exciting and deeply connected dating lives, sex lives, and relationships they long for by developing their true authentic selves. David, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Abby.
I am excited to share some of your wisdom because I have been picking up little tidbits from your social media and really enjoying some of your content. So before we, you know, totally get into what it means to be an authentic man, I think we could probably spend 10 episodes talking about this. And you probably spend your whole day, obviously, talking about this idea. You know, what led you down this path to want to help men with dating, with their sex lives, with their relationships? I mean, it's a tall task.
Yeah, it's a tall task. It is, but a very rewarding one, actually. So it all started for me. For my own difficulty in dating, my own struggles in dating to meet, you know, high quality women, women who I resonate with, women who are interested in the sort of things that I was interested in when it came to life. And that kind of started really kind of 14 years ago. And I started from that. I found myself somehow teaching other men in dating not too long after my own struggles or during my struggles, to be honest. I was learning and teaching. And I kind of jumped out of that and got back into the world of just self-development. Like I did a lot of, you know, self-development work, looking at my own patterns, particularly around my father was a big part of me, but also how I relate to my mother. And then I just lived my life. I did a lot of traveling, which culminated in a 2-year stint of traveling from 2015 to 2017. And I came back and met up with friends and everyone was miserable. Everyone was depressed. Everyone was lonely. They were having divorces. They had disconnection in their relationships. They were struggling to meet partners in the dating world. And a friend of mine said to me, who I've known for many years and we used to coach together back then, he's like, David, look, we know that all these pickup lines and how to dress funny and all these things don't really create long-lasting relationships, right? So why don't we start a podcast? So we started a podcast and we brought together all our knowledge from, you know, having fun, because I think that's one of the things that's often missed in dating. Living a good life, being open-minded, being self-aware, and being able to express ourselves. And we brought all those things together to create the podcast. Its old name was The Authentic Dating Series. It's now called The Authentic Man with David Chambers. And I've kind of evolved that. And that kind of started me coaching again and just, you know, trying to help my clients really navigate the world of dating, but also relationships and intimacy. Because I'm a massive fan of intimacy. I love to talk about sex. It's probably the subject I can talk about most with anybody and the depths of it, because we miss a lot of the nuances often. We just think of the physical stuff. And the relationship coaching really was because I was in it. I was in a relationship and I was having to do the work live. That's what I talk to my clients a lot about. We always often talk about doing the work, but it's like, let's do the work live in the moment when things come up, because that's when we really move past things. That's when we really heal and we create magic in our relationships and our dating lives.
Right. And I mean, I think it is really key to the work that you do, the work that I do as a matchmaker. You know, if we didn't go through what these people are experiencing, you know, obviously we haven't experienced everything there is in dating, but if we didn't have some kind of idea, it'd be kind of hard to help people with those struggles. You know, because we're like, hey, I was there, you know, I went on 75 dates in 6 months and ended up finding someone. And I love what you said about fun, because that is my whole philosophy, that dating should be fun. And why do you feel like people fall into this trap where dating becomes frustrating and negative and just full of burnout?
You know, it's a big question. Let me just say what comes to me. I think one of the first things is meaning. We place so much heavy pressure and meaning on when things don't go the way we want them to, which also is the problem because we have a way we want them to go, which is totally fine and understandable. We can have preference and desire and want, but it doesn't sit with us like a preference, a desire and a want. It sits with us as it has to be this way. So when it doesn't go that way, we then create a lot of meaning about ourselves. So we berate ourselves and say how not good enough we are, unattractive we are, or there's something wrong with us. Or we must put that meaning has to go somewhere, right? We have to reconcile that in our minds. Or we project it outwards and go, dating apps are terrible. All men are rubbish. All women just want men with money, right? And that's how we alleviate that.
I've heard this 1,000 times, yes.
Oh man, I've heard it so many times. And we place so much pressure on it. We place so much pressure that there's no room to have fun. There's no room to enjoy it when there's that much pressure, you know? Like we've all been at work where there's been high pressure deadlines or high pressure meetings. There's no possibility of enjoyment when that exists. And it's really an unconscious choice we make, this pressure, because it doesn't have to be this way.
Right. And it's almost like we're just sort of taught, you know, life isn't fair or life isn't supposed to be this fun. So I'm glad that you're with me on my mission to make dating at least one part of your life a little more fun. And I wanted to ask you too, do you feel like men and women put the same type of pressure on themselves, or how do you see it being different for men compared to women?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, you know, most of my clients are kind of in their 30s and early 40s. And my partner also coaches women. So we get a really interesting perspective in that way. And the truth is I think the biggest pressure for women is children. It's having children. That's the big pressure for women.
Right.
Like, let's be really straight and honest about it. That is the biggest pressure for women. The pressure for men is more around, like, what does it mean about you as a man if you don't have a partner, if you can't find one, right? And that pressure is kind of self-put on. There's also the societal pressure, you know, that comes with being a man. That can be quite heavy for guys, like, oh, you know, being the only single person. You know, I've been there. I was that only single friend at weddings, again and again, going to weddings and people being like, David, like, why is David single? David seems really like charismatic and fun and awesome. Like, what's wrong with him? It's that, right? Because people start to kind of, you know, we feel that from each other. So I think the pressures are different. Obviously, women have societal pressures around getting married and so forth, from family, from friends, and there's cultural ones as well. Like, a lot of my clients are from, you know, like South Asia, or have quite a few kind of Caribbean and descendants of Caribbeans and Black people. And there's also a special kind of cultural pressure that comes with that. But there's also the age one, you know, like if we get to 30, people start asking questions and so forth. So everyone has pressure, right? Everyone has pressure.
Yeah.
When it comes to dating. And it really is, part of dating is like a pressure management system process, isn't it? It's like, how do I manage this? How do I manage my emotions around the pressure? Like, do I just get completely overwhelmed by them? Or do I find ways to like alleviate that pressure and start to look at reality a bit more? Like, you know, I say this to lots of my clients. They start telling me like all the reasons why it's hard or all the reasons why it's going wrong. And I'm like, do they, any of those reasons exist in reality? Or is it just in your head? Like, show me those reasons, please. You know, they're like, oh, all men are struggling on dating apps. I'm like, really? Like, please, if you can show me this, like in this evidence, or is that just in your head? Or is that just something you read somewhere? So yeah, the pressures of the kind of made up pressures, as well as some biological ones as well.
Right. And, you know, I was even telling you before this, when we started, I was having an interesting conversation with a client who was kind of saying a lot of the things, feeling a lot of the pressure that you're talking about, where he's like, you know, I went to 4-speed dating events and I, you know, got matches, but then no one talked to me. You know, am I too nerdy to meet someone? You know, do I not have a good enough job to meet someone? You know, I'm sure you run into people asking you kind of a lot of those questions. You know, I'm just kind of curious, where does your mind go with those thoughts from somebody?
Yeah, so the money one for men is a common one. Money money looks and status, right? Because there is some evidence to suggest from evolutionary psychologists around not necessarily money, it's the potential to gather resources is an important one. Potential, right? And what resources means as well. Resources isn't just money. Resources could be, it could be money, but it can also be like opportunities as well.
Yeah.
So when I hear this, I'm always like, which of those ones don't you have? Which of the three things you just said out of like money, good looks and status, which of those don't you have? And, you know, very rarely does a man ever go, do you know what? I've got all of those. And they're using those as excuses. We always use excuses about things that we don't have. Because suddenly then the responsibility goes from us onto the things we don't have. So when it is the money, good looks and status, I really delve into that with them. Like, what's your thinking about money? What's your thinking about status? Like, do you think you have enough money? Why don't you think you have enough money? Where does that come from? What's your relationship with money? I spend a lot of time talking about relationship with money because it surprisingly affects so much of our lives. So ultimately, it started to look at that, the truthfulness of that. Because again, when you start diving into it, it's like, you know, I once met a homeless man in Miami and he used to pick up women. He's homeless. He had nowhere to live. He used to pick up women, go back to their place, have a nice meal, shower, and then leave the next day, right? Like,
nice struggle for him.
Yeah. So it's like, well, actually, if this guy's doing all right, then it's not about money. And I grew up in quite a poor area of London. And, you know, there are plenty of men there that had girlfriends, multiple girlfriends and so forth. So it's not money and it's not status. So what is it? Like, and then we start to get into what it is. It's like, you know, sometimes it's communication. You know, men, like, truth be told, it's a stereotype about men and communicating, but men are pretty rubbish at communicating. They struggle to know what they're feeling. They struggle to know what they want and to communicate that in a way that can be heard and understood with a partner, right? And more so, they struggle to listen in a way that isn't about formula and fixing and working out. They struggle to just listen, like, listen with empathy, with understanding, with compassion, right? So that's some of the things that we get to work on because, you know, it's not the money, the good looks and success. Like, yeah, those things can help. They can help you make your life appear to be better. They help. They're not the only thing. So it's if you're using those as excuses or using those as things that are stopping you, you have to take a long, hard look at yourself and be like, is this what I really believe to be true?
And if you know, want to believe it, you can find tons and tons of articles online saying, oh, you have to make this much money to find a woman, or, you know, you have to have a house or do all these things. But, you know, if you actually look at, you know, I'll have people saying, oh, well, I need to make, you know, $100,000 before I can meet someone. I'm like, well, why is that, you know, where you want to begin? And what percentage of the population is really making that kind of money? Not a lot. So, you know, it's just really interesting. You know, obviously you can confirm all of these things in your mind just by finding articles. I caution you from doing that. It's kind of like when you have an ailment, don't go to WebMD and don't go Googling it because you're going to think you have cancer and that you're dying immediately. So, you know, if you're going down that deep, dark Google rabbit hole on dating, call me, maybe call David if he's open to it. And, you know, let us know how you're feeling because we could talk you out of that one.
Yeah, that's not a good place to go.
No. And something that I talk to a lot of women about is, you know, they'll give me all these things they're looking for. And really the thing that all comes down to is stability, trust. Like, those are the themes that, and tell me if you disagree, across the board, that's what women want, it seems, in a opposite sex relationship, right?
Yeah. Like, you know, to be able to communicate with someone they can rely on, someone who is, and it's not even someone who is, like, there's a level of consistency that's desired as well, right? A level of consistency, a level of care, kindness, and intelligence. Like, those, you know, kindness and intelligence. I've done this survey a few times through my community and said, what are the things that you want most? And the three things that seem to always come back, men and women, is support, a supportive relationship. They want kindness, right? And they want to be understood as well, right? And everyone wants someone who's intelligent and emotionally intelligent as well, right? And it's really simple human things that we're looking for, right? And these are things that we can all cultivate in our lives, right? We can all do stuff to create this in our lives, that we can all be more kind. How do we start to think about being more kind? Like, okay, we just walk along the street and we see an old person struggling. Instead of going into judgment and being like, oh, look at them or whatever it may be comes to our mind, we think, wow, man, it must be hard being them. Maybe I can help them in some way. Or, you know, intelligence can be something you can cultivate through reading, listening, understanding, even meditation, you know, emotional intelligence, which is probably, I think, is one of the biggest gap for men when it comes to dating relationships is emotional intelligence. Yeah. That's what I do a lot of work on, is first just to go, am I able to coherently explain how I feel at any given time in the day? Like, do I have the words and the language to say, right now, I'm feeling a little bit excited, a little bit nervous. I'm feeling a little bit, it's a funny one there. It was like a little bit of like feeling inferior, like to be able to do that in the moment, right? Because what happens is we're with a partner, a new date, and you're on a date, and ultimately your ability to express yourself, right? And express your life in a way that can be inspirational to a woman, right, is the difference between doing well in dating and doing badly. Like that for me is, that's one of the big ones there, is that ability to express yourself. You can be talking about your love for chess or your love for stamp collection, but if you can do it in a way that lights up someone else, the subject doesn't matter. The person just, we want to feel something. We want to feel enlivened and inspired. But when you can talk about the most interesting topic, but if you do it with the most boring monotone voice, with no physical expression, with stiffness in your body, with uncomfortability of your topic, it's never, you could have all the money in the world, right? You can be a millionaire, right? And you're still not going to, your dating life is still not going to go well.
Mm-hmm. It is so interesting. I mean, I basically don't meet almost a man or woman who doesn't have emotional intelligence on their list somewhere of what they're looking for. And I think the word is almost thrown around a little too much now, where people don't know exactly what it means. They know they want it. But I mean, you described it perfectly, kind of making someone feel heard. And I want to go back to the guy that was my example, the client, and obviously we're keeping him anonymous, but he was talking about, he's like, you know, my interests are kind of on the nerdy end, you know, like Dungeons and Dragons or board games or video games. And I'm like, the right person isn't going to care that those are the things you're interested in. They might like them too. So, you know, would your advice to him also be kind of, you know, just have passion when you're talking about it? And, you know, maybe don't go into all the details about Dungeons and Dragons on date one.
Yeah, but also it's like, I worked at a company, I worked in tech for 16 years, right? So I have a real good understanding of nerdy guys.
Yeah.
And one day some of the guys at work were playing Dungeons and Dragons, and I couldn't explain to you how it works, but he was able to explain Dungeons and Dragons in a way to me that I could fathom and understand, right? And he kind of just used The Office, like we were in, as like, so, you know, this person here, like that's that character and they do these things. And I was like, oh, I get it. Like that sounds pretty cool. I can understand.
Yeah.
That's one part, right? How can you explain the things you love to the average person, right? Like I sometimes have to explain about my love of travel to people who have never really traveled, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't get it. They're like, oh, why do you want to go to Ethiopia and see these, you know, rock churches? And then I explain why it's really interesting to me, but I can explain it in the language that they understand inside of their world, right? Because I have ability to shift between worlds. So it's that ability there to kind of explain that. But the second thing I'd do with this guy is, why do you love those things? Let's get to the underneath, what it is about those activities you love. Let's really get into that. Like, why do you love those? I want to understand. Explain it to me. Tell me. What does it remind you of? Is it childhood? Is it your father? Is it your mother? Is it your grandmother? Whatever it is, like, really, let's get into what it is. And when they start explaining it from that point, you start being enlivened. You're like, yeah, you love playing Dungeons and Dragons because your granddad taught you how to play and you love that man so deeply. And maybe he's not around now, but it allows you to connect with who he is. Who is not going to want to love hearing about your Dungeons and Dragons? And the third thing I also say to them is, really go in, really engage in the things that you love. Like one of my friends, for instance, he loves comics, right? He's into comics and he's into video games. Mm-hmm. He goes to Comic-Con like every year in London. He goes fully dressed up. Like he goes in, he posts it on his Instagram. He takes amazing photos of it, all this. He's fully engaged in what he does, right? He's in it. He's not just teetering around the edge and going, oh, I don't want to get too involved, you know, but he's like in it. He has like, what do they call it? Cosplay parties and all sorts, right? He's fully engaged in the things he loved. And this is what I say to my clients. It's like, don't just teeter around the edge of your passions, like get involved in them, because A, you're going to live more passionate. There's going to be more energy of passion in your life. And secondly, you never know who you're going to meet along the way.
It's so true. That is my advice to everyone too, of go do the things you love. Because if you meet someone also doing that thing that they also love, look at that. You already have something in common with them. And how easy is that to strike up a conversation if you're not sure where to begin? So, you know, Comic-Con might be the ultimate place to go pick up some single men or women. Who knows? I've always wanted to do some kind of speed dating event at a Comic-Con. I think that would be so fun. Everyone in full costume. You don't really know what they look like until you meet up with them after.
My girlfriend did a speed dating event and it was around sex toys. Mm-hmm. And it was...
Yeah, I'm really intrigued now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was really successful speed dating event actually run a couple of years back in London. And she partnered with a sex toy company and everyone loved it because it was fun. It was novel. It was interesting. It's a wonderful idea. But the comical one's a great idea because, you know, people love this stuff out there that we all love, right? And there's some of the time we're not fully getting involved because we're like, oh, people might judge us. People might think we're weird. I don't want to get involved in that. Like,
yeah,
but it's so important to really not just dip your toe, like jump in head first into the things you enjoy that bring you passion and enjoyment in your own life. Because when you're living a life where you are, and the phrase I like to use is you're turned on by your life, right? You wake up in the morning, you're like, yeah, man, I might be going to run for 10 miles and you love running, right? You bring that into the rest of your day. Like it's contagious because everybody wants to feel people that have that level of passion and love for their lives.
Right. And that's even one of the requirements I have for people who work with me. I'm like, you got to have something you're passionate about outside of your job. Because what are you going to talk about with someone? You're going to talk about work all day, every day. I mean, you can to a certain point, but find something. It could just be your dog even. That's fine too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, passion is... We all want more. We all want more passion in our lives.
I know. Even if we're not aware of it, I think, you know, good thing to think about. So I really wanted to ask you, you talked about healthy masculinity a little bit, I know, on your platform. And I know there's a lot of talk more so about toxic masculinity, of course. Like that's a word we hear more. But I'm happy you are actually saying this is healthy masculinity and we're not just going to stay in the negative. How would you define that? For people.
Yeah, I guess I would define it as kind of a set of values, behaviors that are nurturing and good for both men and everybody else in the world, you know, that they come into contact with. You know, it can be things like emotional intelligence, like compassion, care, generosity, leadership as well. Like, you know, it's not just all the kind of things that people might see as quote unquote soft. It's leadership, it's fierceness. It can be interdependence. I think interdependence is a really key one there. We're very much used to thinking that being independent as a man is the pinnacle. Actually, it's not. Interdependence is the pinnacle. That's where you are able to connect with and rely on and be relied upon by multiple people, right? That's how we create greatness in our lives when we're interdependent, whether that's businesses, whether that's relationships, honesty, integrity. Yeah, so I see this healthy masculinity is like ability to have range beyond what you think is masculine. Because when we get into the realms of like only like, oh, I'm a man, so I should always be masculine. We are limited in our range of expression of who we are as human beings, because there'll be things that maybe a man will say, oh, I shouldn't do that because that's feminine. But actually, that's limiting your range, your expression, your ability to be a fuller human being. And I see from my experience of working with men is that when they start to lean into some of those areas that they quote unquote see as feminine, they start to find new parts of themselves that they didn't know they had. You know, whether it's, you know, sometimes with my clients, I get them to start to do some sort of art, whether it's drawing, whether it's painting, whether it's music, whether it's something. And I just want you to lean into that, because if you've been so techie your whole life and you've been like writing code or you've been in the finance world, you've never kind of moved that muscle that's art. And the number of times, about 90% of them, they try it and then they're like, oh, I used to do this as a kid and I really loved it and I stopped doing it because I wasn't good at it. And it's been really enjoyable just to create in a way. So it's seeing masculinity is not just this rigid way of being a man or performing, being like a man. It's like being able to expand your range into ways of being that actually allow you to be your own unique expression of masculinity.
And then how do you see that playing out in relationships? Because obviously, even for women, they're not going to be in their feminine energy the whole time. You know, I see it in myself as running my own business and my podcast. You know, I got to be that masculine energy at some points in my day. But then in my relationship, maybe not as much all the time. So how do you feel like that plays out in relationships, or, you know, how do people find that balance? Because I think it is definitely a big topic of discussion right now.
Yeah, it is. And it's a real art form and skill, because I see there's a lot of kind of responsibilities I see as like a masculine man in a relationship. And one of them is, you know, my partner, to talk about myself, my partner, she definitely, when we met, she's quite a masculine woman. She is used to getting stuff done, building businesses, being organized, you know, all these things. And I just met her masculine edge with just presence and like softness and gentleness. And she felt that she was safe and she could trust and she could fall into her own feminine, right? And that's been a journey for her and a journey for me to kind of hold her in that and allow her to be in that. So I think when we're kind of healthy in our masculinity and we can express in that way, you know, things like communicating how we feel don't suddenly be, you know, this kind of traditional way of looking at masculinity is like, men are stoic. Men don't talk about emotions. Well, you know, you try having a good relationship where you don't express how you feel, right? Or you can't, you know, even expressing love, right? Like, I would say personally, I didn't see any men in my life expressing love to anybody or saying I love you at all growing up. My dad, the men and other men around in my life at all. So I saw that as something that men don't do, right? And I've heard men say it to me now, like, oh, you know, holding hands with my wife, like, you know, men don't do those things. But actually, like, how does that hurt your partner? How is that hurting your relationship? You know, even sex and intimacy, you know, how many times is I speak to men and they just see sex as this performance that they are doing to their partner instead of starting to, you know, bring some of the more healthy things and saying, oh, there's some things I struggle with. Actually, let's have a conversation. Let's have a dialogue. I don't need to be this dominant man all the time. I can be more passive. I can be more receptive as well and switch the roles, because there's a real magic in having that range and being able to kind of switch that role. You switch from masculine to feminine within your relationship and switch back, because it allows you to exercise your range and learn more about you and the things you enjoy and you find to be beautiful, but you also allow your partner to do the same. But the thing I see most common is that, you know, in our day and age, especially for women to be successful, they have to step into their masculine and they have to be in there to be successful. But also, it's a safety thing. A lot of women don't feel safe to be feminine because of the many terrible things that have happened to women through history. So I see as a role in society, not just in relationship, for healthy masculine men, is to create spaces. And that can be your relationship. That could be just a conversation for women to safely step into their feminine energy and for them to experience that as a safe place to be, a safe place to express themselves from.
Right. And like you said, I think finding a partner who's, you know, open to having these discussions, you know, because it'll be really hard to read someone's mind or figure out, like, how can I make you feel like this is a safe place? You know, I know you mentioned that your partner is kind of in a similar field, but working with women, I can imagine some of your conversations, you know, it must be very interesting to both, like, be able to communicate so openly, right?
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, like, at the end of any day or, you know, on the weekend, she can come to me and say, I'm feeling sad. I feel sad. You know, last week she did. She came to me. She was on her period and she was like, I feel sad. And I said, oh, you feel sad? She goes, yeah. And this is what I'm about to explain here is quite a, I feel like it's quite an advanced concept, but part of how I help her get out of where she doesn't want to be and, you know, liberate her into the way she wants to be is through playfulness. Through playfulness and through, it can be physical playfulness, it can be just verbal. You know, in that moment when she was sad, I was like, what are you sad about? And she was like, I don't know. And I was like, oh, you don't know what you're sad about. I want to be sad. And a lot of you might hear this and be like, oh my God, you're mocking her and so forth. But we have, you know, there's a fine line and I'm very good at treading that line in my relationship. Yeah. And it actually brings, because she laughs, right? She laughs. She'll laugh. And then I'll make faces and I might try and bite her nose, or I might walk around the room like a spoilt child that's stamping, right? And I turn around and she's smiling, right? She's laughing, right? And I've liberated her out of this sadness into something that's more playful, more fun for her. So it's kind of artfully being able to be there to support our partner in the moment. I think that is a real magic of that dynamic.
Oh, definitely. And for single people listening, don't worry. You don't have to be at that level yet, but I'm sure David can help you get there. I know you have an exciting thing happening in the next couple of months, at least that you filled in for me when you sent me an email.
Yeah. I'm running a men's program. It's an 8-week group coaching program. It's the second time I've run this. And it's really to tackle the three main issues I see in men. You know, one of them we've talked about a lot, which is communication and emotional expression and self-expression as well. It's a huge blocker, a lot of men, to good relationships and good dating lives. The other part that I really cover in there is leadership of your own life, right? Leadership, you know, that's just like going towards the things you want, moving past fear, like identifying, you know, if fear is the thing that's stopping you from going after what you want, whether it's like dating, whether it's inside your relationship, whether it's conversations at work, and having the leadership to step up and take the action towards what you want, but also doing that from a place of compassion, understanding of the other side or other people, especially if you're leading people. A massive part of kind of healthy leadership is having an understanding and a connection to the people that you're leading. So there's something I really cover in there, as well as sex and intimacy is a big part of it, because I think there's this almost unsaid thing that men are sexually liberated. You know, there's this, no one's thinking about men needing sexual liberation. But actually, men, in my experience, are far more sexually suppressed than women now. Women have had this sexual liberation going on for decades now, right? To the point now where we have some incredible women doing amazing embodiment work, healing work in the realms of sexuality. And men have been left behind. They're still in the dark ages, most of them. So I bring some work to them to help them express themselves sexually and bring the levels of communication in that area, as well as do all this work with men. Because the one other thing I found of a lot of men is they don't feel safe with other men. They don't feel safe to communicate with them. They don't feel safe to even be friends with them and being open and honest. And through this group coaching program, I literally saw miracles. You know, men who hadn't been out on dates in 2 or 3 years that are going out on multiple dates a month. People getting over fears that they'd been holding back for years. So it's really, really, really something that I am deeply, deeply passionate about.
Amazing. I already am like, I have a few clients I need to send your way for this program. And how can people sign up? Is there a cost associated with it they should know about?
Yes. The cost is £900. So that's UK pounds. That's how I work in the UK. Well, I'm not in the UK, but that's UK pounds. And yeah, it's like I said, it's 8 weeks long. Getting in contact with me through email, probably the best place, which is hello@theauthenticman.net. But yeah, it's something, I still have a few spots open if it's something you're interested in.
Awesome. We will put that email in the show notes. So if you guys are listening, you can head over, send David an email. And if you're watching on YouTube and seeing our beautiful faces, just scroll down. You'll see it. You'll see it down there. Copy and paste his email. David, how else can people follow you, connect with you, you know, give us all of the shameless plugs? Because I want to make sure that people can see all the cool things you're up to.
Yeah. So Instagram is probably my most used platform. So you can find me at @theauthenticman_. That's where I'm posting pretty much daily snippets, videos, bits of advice and tips and my own just thoughts, as well as my podcast, which is The Authentic Man with David Chambers. You can find that on, you know, Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your podcast from.
And I mean, come on, who wouldn't want to listen to your voice for, you know, a few hours? I'm so glad that I got to enjoy it the past 30 minutes with you.
Thank you.
So yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I feel like we're going to have to do another episode because this was super insightful. I know I didn't even get to ask you all the questions I wanted to, but we'll do more. But before I let you go, I always like to end. Is there a little extra words of wisdom or something you'd like to impart to single listeners before I let you go?
What is it? It's that really observe your thinking that you have about dating or the men or women that you date. And inside of that, it's like, what are the thoughts that kind of automatically come across your mind? What are the assumptions that automatically and very quickly come across your mind when you're dating or where things start to go well or start to go badly? And just start to really create a little bit of space between those thoughts and you, because you are not your thoughts, right? We have these thoughts that, you know, we've absorbed through being on the internet, through family and friends and childhood and all that. And it's starting to like see those automatic thoughts, those automatic judgments, because those are a huge, huge part that will get in the way of you having a happy and enjoyable dating life and also getting into the sort of quality relationship that you want.
Ooh, I love that. I'm glad I asked for some extra wisdom because that was great. I even have a sticky note on my computer right in front of me that says interesting point of view, that I have this interesting point of view, just to literally talk myself out of that exact same thing. We all have strange thoughts that plague us all the time. So if you're listening, you're not the only one.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, David, thank you again. It was a pleasure having you on, and I hope you have an amazing evening. I know you are in Portugal, so not in the same time zone in the slightest.
Thank you, Abby. I will do.
Disclaimer: this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. The stories and statements expressed herein are experiences and opinions. They may not represent the views of the production studio or the hosts. If you disagree with our content, that's okay. No podcast is perfect for everyone.